Welcome everybody to the Listen Up Podcast. It's your boy Brandon at Future No Dad 24.
This your boy Sam at More Life One.
Let's get it. Put it up.
The type of people made the club before. Many a day has passed.
What's up, everybody?
Yo, got to Listen Up Podcast, man. This your boy Sam. I'm joined by my guest Philip Singleton, Ebo. I don't know the. I don't want to mispronounce the last name, but I know it got a quote to it.
I was gonna say it's close enough, Ebo and Sua, but it's close enough.
Okay. And I know Philip is a lobbyist. You want to go ahead and give your resume right quick, Philip?
Yeah, Philip Singleton, they call me the hip-hop lobbyist. I've been in the political sphere since roughly 2008, 2009. Started off as an unpaid intern in Tallahassee. Worked at a law firm after that. Left them about 8 years ago. Started my own practice to really bridge the gap between the culture and actually get things in the process. Have some good business relationships in the entertainment field. Also some Fortune 200 nonprofits at risk with a little bit of everything in. I know that there was some confusion about the name and likeness laws after this week's transactions of early signing day and some of the losses that Florida State ended up getting, or the one big loss they got. So
yeah,
there needs to be some clarity around the law. But my biggest thing is at least understanding the law for itself and how
right.
the culture be
right.
more educated and influence policy.
All right. And Ebo, you want to give a little bit of I know you actually played at Florida State. Most of our listeners should know that you played at Florida State, so you want to give like a little resume? Because I mean, it's the reason why I asked you to come on because I knew you was into politics.
Yeah.
You was like, no, I know somebody actually knows it more than I do, so let me ask him, and that's how we end up getting Philip on. But you want to give a little bit of resume?
Yeah, man, of course. So Ebo and Sua, you know, like you said, I am in politics sphere a little bit. I actually played at Florida State from 2012 to 2014, and then afterwards went on and. Really delved into the politics sphere and actually ran for office, got elected. So I do know a little bit about the law as well. Obviously, I'm not in it as much as Philip, but definitely have a little bit of the knowledge, you know, especially being a former athlete at the collegiate level.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of things that we can do to help our athletes now that we're going to have to do, you know, before Florida falls behind. You know, we've already paid for it a little bit, so now we got to make sure that whatever law and legislation is going in now is going to be proactive, you know? So, excited to be here.
Yeah, man. And the reason why we're doing this is because, so I started a lot of shit by saying fire Mike Norvell because we didn't get a couple recruits. And somebody DM'd me, was like, Sam, you know, you're wrong for this. That's not right. And they was like, well, the reason why we couldn't get the recruits was because of NIL, the money that was given to these recruits. Really swayed their opinion and swayed their commitments. And I was like, okay, well, I agree that might have swayed their, you know, but we're also Florida State, so why are we so far behind with the NIL, right? Like, we knew about this last year. This is not something that they woke up on National Sunday like, hey, everybody can give money today. Like, no. I think Florida State was one of the first ones to start with Apex, if I'm not mistaken, right, Ebo?
Yep.
So they started with Ebo. I mean, they started with Apex. So I was thinking, well, they should be on this. But then I did hear things in the background that some former players was trying to push Florida State with this NIL situation. Like, hey, we need to start doing this. We need to start doing that. And Florida State was a little hesitant. And I heard that the law itself is what caused the hesitancy because Florida State don't like to drive. They're not like Alabama, Ole Miss. They're not going to drive 80 miles, 90 miles in a school zone, right? They're going to just kind of like, if it's 20 miles per hour, Florida State want to drive 15. So I was like, okay, well, that's a problem. So then I was like, well, I don't want to come out and say NIL is the problem because I don't understand the NIL. So I was like, I'd rather have people on the show that can talk about the NIL, the politics of all this, what happened with the state of Florida and everything. So that's why I got you guys on. So I'm going to start with Philip. What exactly was the law that was brought into really hindered Florida State?
Well, I don't think it really hindered Florida State, to be clear. Given some background, I know the Sports Illustrated article came out, Chip LaMarca, Representative Chip LaMarca, Good Republican from South Florida, but great guy in general outside of politics, right? Inside politics too. But him and his staff, Corey, they have led this charge at least for two and a half years to say, you know what, students in Florida, the NCAA is just really controlling the amateur status of athletes. And I think we saw it a couple of years ago with the punter, I want to say at UCF, where he was making YouTube videos and the NCAA basically said that, you know, you're not eligible because you're profiting off a YouTube image. And that ends up getting to a point of like, what can you really do from amateur status? If you're not going to go to the NFL, there's got to be something you can do. So I'm not saying that specifically is the reason Chip and Corey really took a spearhead for this, but it was really for a fact of, you know, the NCAA got to a point where they were just controlling athletes' futures and their pockets. And we know that when it comes to some sports, basketball, football, which are really dominated by African-Americans, that's where you really see the problem. You don't see the issue in golf and tennis, baseball and other things of that nature. It really ends up being the sports that, that black males end up dominating in some aspects. So what they end up creating was similar to what California, Colorado, Mississippi, and other states created, was a framework for the name and likeness. Because essentially, if you look at policy throughout history, every state essentially may pass some laws, then the federal government may get involved, and then it'll be a nationwide thing. So basically, state to state, everybody was passing their name and likeness laws, their own versions of laws. California has theirs, Colorado, Florida, whatever. And what ends up happening is there may be a line in there that says, you know what, no university can partner a name and likeness deal before a student enrolls, right?
Right.
And if another state, let's say Mississippi doesn't have that, Mississippi says that if you're over 18, you can essentially go into a name and likeness deal before you enroll in some aspect. So when you look at it, it gives a competitive advantage to other states because the laws in other states don't say the same thing that Florida law says.
Right.
So essentially, we get to a point where the early signing day happens, number one recruit throws a Georgia hat, throws a Florida State hat, throws Alabama hat. And and people really feel that HBCU status, if it was any of those Power Five conferences, nobody would have cared. But because he picked Jackson State, because he picked a small HBCU in Mississippi, quote unquote, that was end up being the reason. But when you look at it, even having a conversation, and the only part I'll share with my conversation with the representative was, you know, if it helps Dion and helps HBCUs get more resources, then what would be the problem? And I think we agreed there, because if you get into the deeper weeds of the NCAA, there has been an angle to where HBCUs have been angled to be under probation more, academic probation, financial probation, whatever it is. And this could be a way to where the name and likeness piece could actually help boost some of the HBCU programs. So that's one part of the program. But one thing that people keep forgetting is, I want to say Ed O'Bannon and his brother sued the NCAA for their name and likeness issues a couple of years ago. And that was the main reason that we don't have an NCAA college football game for the past six, 7 years. And a lot of those issues end up being you download names, you download rosters, you know you're playing with Reggie Bush, you know you're playing with whoever is in the game, but then those players don't get any profit off their likeness until they get to the NFL, if they make it to the NFL.
Right.
So a major part of it was to say, you know what, let's even the playing field. And even with HBCUs, and I think the bigger piece is, it's an attack on NCAA. It's not an attack on HBCUs. It's not an attack on Dion, right?
Right.
It's an attack on the structure of what amateur sports were, because you can watch a 30 for 30 and find out that back in the 70s and 80s, these coaches are dropping $500,000, $100,000 to these students and their families in order to get them to recruit to go to Alabama or wherever. Now it's to a point where, okay, instead of doing that, technology's hit a point where your image, your likeness, who you are, your individual brand is important. Right. So you should be able to profit off of it. And that's really where we are. So, sorry for going too far down.
No, you're good. I mean, this show is for y'all. I'm not going to like go as long as y'all want. Because, I mean, I want people to, if you got questions, and I see people in the comments, you got questions, put your questions up. We'll answer them. Because I think the ideal is we shouldn't be talking about, because I think a lot of people are making this about, is it right what Dion did? Is it that, how much are we paying these kids? Should they keep getting paid? And it's a whole conversation surrounding what's okay and what's not okay. And I think the problem with a lot of this is a black podcast, for the record. So, I mean, I know white people listen to it, and I got no problem with that. I mean, but we're talking about specifically like black issues right now, right? And I told somebody this. I was like, some of these kids, especially the black kids that play sports, they're at their highest markability coming out of high school, right? That's their highest level of markability, right? They're getting 5,000 followers, or, you know, you only care about that five-star that just committed. Some of these guys get hurt. You know, there's a lot of stories about guys getting hurt and they don't have a career that you think they're going to have.
Yeah.
But they never got paid, you know, and they're working at like a warehouse. I've met several of them, you know. So I want to just get into it. And if people got questions, let's ask the questions. But Ebo, I'm going to go to you because I know that you work pretty close within the state capitol. How was the whole NIL received, and what is the perception that the Florida schools or the Florida legislation had, and did they miscalculate a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, you saw when the original bill got passed, and I think Philip can attest to this, in terms of votes, the majority, it seemed like the majority of legislators in the House and in the Senate were amicable to the bill, you know, and I think people realized that since this was a relatively new subject that people were actually touching on, it was going to need a lot of work, you know, and now after Travis Hunter's decision, I think that's kind of been brought to the forefront. I mean, we've seen in other states, you know, if you look at Utah, what was it? BYU is doing the $50,000 for every single walk-on that's coming on,
right,
or something along those lines. And then you see in some of the other states what they're doing for their athletes. And then even you see in Miami, I think it was, where they have that fitness group that's given NIL deals to everybody. So everybody's kind of, you know, swimming at their own pace in this. And obviously, eventually, there's going to be some parity in terms of who gets what and what you're allowed to do. But Sam, what you said is a great point in terms of kind of how FSU is handling this. You know, if it's in a 20 mile per hour speed limit, we're going 15, you know?
Right.
And we all know it's better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. But it, you know, just from the past, you know, we've had to kind of take this at a specific angle and a specific speed. So, you know, I think now it's going to be, I think now legislators are going to be taking notice and seeing, hey, you know, if there is more legislation that we can put through that's actually going to be equitable for everybody, for every athlete, whether it's a male, female, golf, football, you know, I think there's a number of legislators who are going to be a lot more amicable to bills that are actually going to be.
Yeah,
did I freeze?
Yeah, you kind of froze up a little bit. So do you feel like they wasn't as amicable to this new change in landscape? Do you think that was like, they was like, well, we'll put this bill out, whatever, but they didn't.
I think the general group of them were. But there needed to be more that are hopping on board and more that can take advantage of it.
Mm. Go ahead, Philip. You can if you want to add to that.
I think that they were really, from a legislative standpoint, I think they were supportive in Florida to say, you know, it's a free market kind of deal. And I think that's the biggest thing, especially when you're looking at philosophical differences.
Right.
Liberal, Republican, whatever. It's like when we're talking about the free market, essentially you have your name and likeness, you have your brand. If you're going on the field and you're dominating, if you're having a great 3-4 weeks in college football, you should be able to profit. When you get hurt, you know, it's going to go down. It's kind of like fantasy football. You know, right. Christian McCaffrey, top of the draft. But those first 3-4 weeks, it's like, wait a minute, your stock's going down. So your NIL, I guess, proceeds will go down essentially.
Right.
Because you're not on the field. You're not on ESPN every week. So it's one of those things that say, you know what, injuries do happen, things do happen. But I think that from a free market standpoint, and say, you know what, allow people to invest in you, allow right. people to invest in what your abilities are. I think that's exactly what it is. And it gets to a point where politicians supported it. It's mm-hmm. just that the bigger fact of the bigger politics of the NCAA and that institution
right.
was the thing that had to get broken apart, because kind of like saying earlier, with all the different states enacting these different things, and they end up being the Power Five conference states, or the right. SEC, ACC, Pac-12, whatever it may be, right?
Right.
With a lot of those colleges passing those laws, it has NCAA to sit back and say, hey, we have to do something here because we're going to be railroaded against the laws and policies in the state if we don't make any changes.
Right.
So I think that that's a bigger thing, but there is going to have to be like a straight bar across the country that says, okay, this is the standard. But right now, because all the policies in all the different states keep changing, it's like everybody's all over the place. So it creates a state by state advantage to say, you know what? Yeah, go to Utah and walk on and get a $50,000, because that'll take care of your school. Right. But essentially, it's like if you want to go to another state, you have to look at the advantages. And not to say that that should be a main thing for college athletics, but it does when you have coaches end up leaving. Like yep. the Oklahoma USC situation, the coach coaches Saturday and he's gone for a better deal Sunday. It's like we're at a situation where the kids have to commit to the university, but everybody else who's getting top dollar isn't. So it like evens the playing field. But at the same time, I think one thing that is kind of getting lost in here, and Deion quoted it, is like if people keep talking about a Barstool's thing of $1 million for Hunter to go to Jackson State. And he said, listen, why would I promise this kid more than my sons who play for the team? And why would I have him make more than the coach?
Right.
And then when you think about it, and you know what, I'm in Jacksonville, so we had an Urban Meyer situation. It's kind of like you have the situation where if professionally you have a coach who's used to talking to college kids because they're not making any money, now you have their professionals, so you got to talk to them and treat them with a certain amount of respect.
Right.
That's not going to happen at the college level. So it's not going to be a point to where you have these coaches saying, listen, you're going to get $1 million name and likeness deal off of this if you right. come to my university. But you think they want to battle with the most popular student versus the coach on who making the most money? Because at that point, you're losing control of the institution. So there's going to be some balance in there. It's just a fact of how we make that happen. And for me personally, how does it benefit HBCUs? Like I'm wearing my old school FAMU basketball athletic shirt because I know that the HBCU programs are typically in the red. But it's like if the NIL can help bring these programs in the black, then it's going to help, essentially. And I'm not saying it like just proceeds to the university, but there's got to be something to where the athletes and the athletic departments for the smaller budget athletic departments benefit from a name and likeness deal.
Yeah, yeah. That's okay. So that's interesting. I guess the bigger point with that, what you're saying. So the Deion thing about the whole thing, and I keep saying this, is like I have no ill will towards Deion because a lot of times we ask these black public figures to come back and give back to the community, right? And we're the only people that ask that of our people, right? Like there's nobody saying, hey, Bill Gates, you need to give back to the white community. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just always the black people need to give back to the black community. So like a lot of these big time money people, they find things that they want to attack, whether it's Ebola or whatever their little initiative might be, right? Mm-hmm. But in the black community, we want people to do the hard work, right? We want them to put their hands into the hard work. And with Deion, I feel like he is doing the hard work, right? He don't have to deal with all these kids, their mamas. He don't have to do that. Like he could go sit at his big mansion, come on bar stools or come on NFL Network, mm-hmm. make $10 million, and he don't have to do that. Like, he's doing that right. for them. And right. A big part of this, and I guess we get into the HBCU angle of all of this, and I think me and this other player that know Deion pretty well was talking about this, and I'm going to see if he want to come on eventually, but he said to me, he was like, hey, man, a lot of black coaches and black players that's went to the NFL or played in college football, you know, they want to coach at the college football level, right? They want to get involved, but they make it so hard for us to get jobs, right? Because you have to know somebody to get a job. Yes. And he was like, you don't hire as head coaches. It's only two of us, or three, I think, maybe three. He says, only like two or three of us. So then they can't really fill their whole staff out with black people because that's a red flag to certain people. That scares people, right?
Right, right, right.
I think somebody said Mike Norvell has six black coaches. And Willie has seven. That was one too many. I was like, HBCU, what's going on here? And he was saying, you know, when Deion made that pitch to Florida State about being a head coach, he also made a pitch about being like the football GM. I don't know how true this is. This is just what somebody's telling me.
Sure.
And he made a pitch about marketing FSU, being a part of the marketing of FSU, the branding of FSU, to rebrand the program. And they kind of thought it was impressive, but they still kind of shoot him out the room like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you barely went to school here. You made us change the rules for scholastic athletes.
Right.
You didn't attend. You didn't graduate from Florida State. You end up getting your degree from Talladega College. Right. So I think not to cut you off, Sam. What I think is that Deion had opportunity, but I think even in politics, because I'm very prone to go off on these people in politics because they don't hire blacks or don't give blacks opportunities. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. And it's like, why should one of arguably the best cornerbacks defensive backs in the NFL, two-way player, baseball player as well. Why should he have to have such a high criteria to get in when we have people who have more experience who suck, right?
Right.
So it doesn't make any sense how, and I'll be honest, at first I thought it was a play for his boys, right? For his sons, Deion.
Yeah.
Coach him in high school. Let me take him to college. I can coach him in college. And then after that, I may get a big opportunity. But then the domino effect is Eddie George ends up getting hired at Tennessee State. You have Hugh Jackson finally getting an opportunity at Grambling State University. And all these things through ESPN, even broadcasting more Jackson State or HBCU games and FAMU on ESPN Plus and things of that nature. It's like he's created the angle that he says, you know what, Florida State, I tried to give this to you. You didn't see the vision, right? And because you didn't see the vision, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to an HBCU and I'm going to build here. And yes, it started off rough. I remember the first game they said that, you know, somebody broke in the locker room and stole the stuff. All this other stuff, that ended up being false. And it's like, you know what? The little bits of things that he did, like I need my players' names on the back of the jersey. Because their mamas and grandmamas need to know who they are. They don't just need to look at the number 25, 36, whatever.
Right.
And it's like that, what he's instilling in these kids is something powerful. Because you can look at a video of him and Chad Johnson and laugh about it. But then when you sit down and analyze what he's saying, like, you know, I could base it off your right foot or your left foot, where you're going.
Right.
But imagine if he's a coach on the field teaching these kids, you're only going to get better if the best is teaching. And even if he's not instilling everything in you, you're going to get better. And I think that what Florida State did was look at, you know what, he doesn't have the experience. But, I mean, did Jimbo have that much experience when he was just an offensive coordinator? I mean, when he was a head coach, he had to step in, because what they forget is, even though you're a DB coach, offensive coordinator, D coordinator, the head coach gets the wins and losses. So essentially, nobody has experience when they start. And if you want a real life example, look at the NBA when Steve Kerr went out and Luke Walton was coaching. Luke Walton got those records, but when he started coaching, those number L's. So it's kind of like that experience is in there, but it's like, you know what? When you're the man in the arena, when you're the man at the top of this program, it's a whole nother issue. And then when you look at the fact of Deion has his number retired and he's Florida State true and true, it's like there's nobody that can sell that program better than him.
Right.
Some aspect, especially in the transition of Jimbo not recruiting, leaving a horrible class and going to Texas A&M. What they did with Willie, a whole nother karma situation.
Right.
And bringing in Mike now and giving him the extension, it's kind of like, you know what? If anything, karma hit him in the face, because that extension came last night and Hunter decided next morning, I'm not going. And when you really want to think about it, I hate the sidebar here, Florida State, because my wife went to Florida State.
Go ahead, man. By all means.
the last few five-star recruits that came through, what has Florida State done with them? Right?
Yeah.
And when you really think about it, I'm not saying Florida State's a horrible program. They're a rebuilding program, but it's a fact to say, okay, if they don't have their shit together, why should I waste my talents and go there? I can at least go to a coach that I know is going to make me a good DB, who, as Deion said, you know you're going to play both ways. You're going to be a receiver, and you're going to be a DB. And a fact of, and I think a small part, and I did tell Chip, you know, I think the biggest part is that small HBCU Mississippi piece really may have rubbed people the wrong way, because you're not looking at, you know, Jerry Rice went to that school, Walter Payton went to that school, all these people who came through that university and made it to the NFL and made it to the Hall of Fame, and says, you know what, regardless of where you go to school, the NFL is going to find you. The NBA is going to find you. Professionals are going to find you regardless. Yeah. It's a fact of what you instill in that program. And I think what Florida State missed is the fact of Deion, what he's able to bring in that aura. I have a friend of mine who tells this urban legend that Deion Sanders is the only man that ran a 4.23 in Timberlands.
Right.
So all that put together, it's like when you have the aura of a great coach or a great athlete and you know what he's done, you got to respect it.
Yeah. Yeah. People that's just joining the show, man, I really appreciate it. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. We're having a good conversation with Phillip Singleton, who's a Florida lobbyist, the hip hop lobbyist. And he's breaking down some of this NIL stuff and some of the behind the scenes that I think a lot of people are saying, let's not blame Mike Norvell. Let's look behind the scenes. Maybe this is the things that affect it. So we having a conversation about that. The Deion thing is interesting, because I would say this, right? When we talk about these coaches, the perception of these great black players is almost like they're not savants at their job, right? They were just gifted this crazy athletic talent, and that's why they're so good, right? It's like one in a million chance that Deion Sanders would be Deion Sanders. Like, they don't take into the fact, like Deion said, I studied film crazy, right? Like, Mickey Andrews, like, this dude would be in the film room with me for 12 hours a day, going through tape with me. Like, Mickey Andrews was saying this about Deion, and that he is just as much of a gym rat that cares just as much about the X's and the O's of a game as much as Sean McVay does, right? But people talk about a Sean McVay like, oh my God, his brain is so big. He knows more than any football than anybody has ever existed. If you just be around him, you deserve a job, right? If you serve Sean McVay coffee, you deserve a head coaching job in the NFL. And it's, it's, I mean, and there's nothing against Sean McVay, because I do think Sean McVay is a good coach. I'm not knocking him, but it's crazy when you look at a guy like a Hugh Jackson, and they make that black head coach that stand on the sideline, that when he's losing game, they make him seem like, well, he's just dumb. He's a dumb person that doesn't know what he's doing.
Like Mike Tomlin, anytime he loses in the playoffs,
right?
All of a sudden he's on the hot seat. I get you.
Yeah, he's a great coach. Yeah, right. But then when Sean Payton loses, it's like, well, you know, circumstances. The circumstances matter.
Receivers were hurt. Defenses broke. It's more excuses.
It's the nuances of the conversation. Now we care about nuances when we talk about certain coaches, but we don't care about the nuances when we talk about the other coaches. Right. So when this guy was talking to me about Deion specifically, he was like, do you think the greatest DB in football history isn't smart? You don't think he understands defensive scheme, right?
Right.
You don't think that guy understands how a program should look, what it should look like, what it should run like, how kids should feel within that program?
Right.
And I was like, you know, that's an interesting point. So I'm not saying Florida State should have hired Deion Sanders, but I'm saying we don't give those guys that want to coach more of an opportunity. We lay off them out the building a lot, right?
Right.
And we want them to do the little things, right? We want them to go wash jerseys. Like, dude, these are Hall of Famers. These are people that played 5 and 6 years in the NFL. They probably not going to submit themselves to living like that, right? Like, they deserve a little bit more credit than that, right?
Right.
So I do think the Deion thing is interesting. But and then another thing with Deion too, man, and this is what somebody else told me about Deion, and we'll move over to HBCUs in a minute. But he said, man, when Deion was making, you know, doing what he was doing at Florida State, you know, not everybody was marketable on that team, you know. And he said, Deion came back and gave a lot to us to help us out, you know, whether it was making sure this person mama had money for this, or making sure somebody did this and had that and this and that for the guy that was on the team that he played with. So, but in the media, and he said this, they make him seem like the most selfish, egomaniacal person. And he was like, it's just weird to me that they do that, because he came down to Tallahassee, I think, when Willie was here, and said anybody came to Golden Corral to eat free. You know what I'm saying? But this is the person that people want to burn his jersey and stuff. Even like I was telling somebody about LeBron James, I'm like, I might have a problem with LeBron James on the court, but off the court?
Perfect guy.
He's perfect. I mean, who builds a school? Who builds a school? Like, who does that? You know what I'm saying? Like,
those people
deserve all the flowers in the world. You know what I'm saying? So I think the narrative of Deion needs to change.
I think the narrative of black coaches, because I like Coach Hamilton. I think he's done a great job at Florida State, but I do feel that it's kind of hard that unless he makes an NCAA tournament, and mind you, he's built a great program over the past few decades or decade plus. The issue is when about 3-4 years ago, when you're hearing he's on the hot seat every year.
Right.
And it's like, how when he's beating Duke? How when he's beating North Carolina? How when he's getting to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight or whatever it is? And it's like, why does a black coach have to do so much more? And I guess until I win a national title for y'all, it's never good enough.
Right.
But even then, it's like, if somebody comes in and pulls a John Gruden with a Tony Dungy and takes his team to a championship, all of a sudden I just get, you know, pushed to the side. And this guy was the reason that fixed it. Or even Steve Kerr, Mark Jackson in the NBA. So it happens to where black coaches get the opportunity, but they know they're walking on eggshells. And even then, when some black coaches who may have experience and may go to some HBCUs, it's like, you know what, you're leaving a program like a USF and you're coming to a FAMU. And it's like, you know what, the athletic department isn't as funded as that one or whatever it may be. But it's like, you know what, you have to do what you have to do and work within the confines to build a good program. But nobody really wants to talk about what it takes to build a good program and then the stresses that some of these coaches are on, or even the opportunities that they get. So it's kind of like you get an opportunity, but you're on a shoestring budget. You're on a shoestring leash, and it's like, you know what, the second you mess up, you get a couple losses, you could be out of here. So it's one of those things. But I think the biggest thing that Deion ended up really highlighting is the fact of some of the underlying issues of not only, you know, signing a top recruit, but also what the difference between the HBCU program and these PWI programs bring, and how all of a sudden, if we start winning, it's going to start changing some trajectories of how the NCAA and some of the laws work regarding recruiting.
Yeah. So let me ask you another question while we're talking about, I guess we can venture into this black head coach thing a little bit more. Do you think, because I think somebody said relatability. I think when we did the Fire Mike Norvell Spaces, you know, which is funny, still funny to me, like crazy. Yeah. But we were talking about this. A guy said, well, why don't you want to have more black coaches on these sidelines than just the one token black coach, right? So, like, whenever a school like a Bama or Florida State hires a black coach, you're like, oh, but they brought him to relate to the kids, right? We don't need one guy to come relate to the kids, right? So
70 kids.
Right, right. He's the recruiter, right? That black coach we just hired, he's gonna be the recruiter. Like, he could talk to mom and dad or whatever.
Yeah, Randy Shannon. Let's talk.
Yeah, about. He's the Randy Shannon, right? Yeah. But I think if you get more of these black kids with the moms and the dads, and especially with the black these guys going to these HBCUs with Dion, and I think Hugh Jackson's down there. I think Eddie George is in Tennessee right now. Mm-hmm. If those players start playing for those coaches on the HBCU level, I mean, the sponsorship dollars will follow them because the money is always going to follow the talent. You know, that's right, always the case. Right. And I wonder, what do you think about that? Like, far as the money and the talent and all this stuff, like, is it possible that we actually could see a HBCU renaissance?
Yeah, we can. And that's the difference. And I think that what's missing in this whole conversation is the MEAC SWAC movement, right? Mm-hmm. We got to a point where FAMU and Bethune-Cookman moved from the MEAC, Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, which went up the Eastern Seaboard of Maryland,
right,
to where they're in the SWAC, to where it's more I-10, right, where everything ends up being more conveniently traveled. And as someone who worked with FAMU's basketball team during the Mike Gillespie days, I remember having, you know, there were buses, right? Yeah. There isn't any super chartered flights or anything of that nature. And this was a few decades so back, to where we're taking a bus to Daytona. We're taking a bus we're flying to Cleveland, but then we're taking a bus all through Akron, Cleveland, all upstate, whatever it may be. And it's like, it's nice, but we know that's not how top programs are traveling, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have a $20 meal budget for their students, for everybody on the team. So it's kind of one of those things to where the shift that ends up happening, to where you have the conference of realignments for HBCUs, actually gets them in a situation to where they can be in the black, because the travel was a lot of the reason why they were in the red, right? Mm-hmm. On top of that, another aspect that people really don't look at is the crowds. Now, if you watch an NBA game, look at the crowd, it's predominantly white, right?
But I mean, they've priced us out of it. They've priced us out of going to these games.
This is collegiate, NBA, NFL, mm-hmm, whatever. When we're looking at a fan base, I'll say this, and I'm not trying to be whatever, but it's real. Black folks will watch games. White folks will go to games, right? And the issue ends up being you have a fan base that actually goes to games at PWIs. And I'm not saying, you know, the student services fees, you know, they pay for student tickets, but it's a fact of, okay, we can fill an arena. If Duke is coming to Florida State, the arena is going to be packed. UNC Chapel Hill coming in, mm-hmm, the arena is going to be packed. Mm-hmm. But if Cookman comes to FAMU at the Al Lawson Center, you may have 100, 200 people, unless it's a huge rival to where all the students are coming in.
Right.
So that's one aspect of it. So switching conferences ends up being to a point of, you know what, if we know that the fan bases aren't going to be at all the games, mm-hmm, we can at least cut the travel and put our programs in the black to where we can invest more in athletic trainers. We can do these different things. But then you have a situation where some of these athletic departments only have maybe 5 trainers for 7 sports, right?
Yeah, we saw that with Master P, that situation they were just talking about recently.
Right. So you have the Florida State across the street from FAMU that may have 50 trainers for 7 sports. But it's like, you know what? That ends up getting to a conversation of, okay, if an athlete does get hurt, what is their recovery time? If you have 50 trainers, of course, you can put them on a nutrition plan. You can get them there. Right. But HBCUs are getting to a point where it's like, you know what? If we can be in the black and we can save some money, we can hire additional resources. We can get some of these deals. We can do what we can to really at least bridge the gap, but understanding that having these bigger programs that operate the athletic departments like a business, mm-hmm, versus the HBCUs that are just trying to get solvent, is a point of saying, you know what, we're going to get there, but we need a little help to get there. Not just a name and likeness piece, but we need a shift in the culture of how black sports are advertised, how black sports are marketed, how they're put on TV, when we can get sports deals and things of that nature. And a part of it is, if Dion essentially can create and stay within Jackson State and stay within the SWAC, to where the SWAC gets its own network, right? Like an SEC network or ACC network. That's how you end up changing and shifting the culture, because now we have media dollars buying in. Now we have people who want to watch the games, even LeBron partnering with FAMU and things of that nature. It helps put awareness on it. But now to a point of, you know what can we do to get the additional marketing ad revenue in? Because that's really the bigger difference. Because when COVID hit, it wasn't a player safety issue. it was a marketing dollars issue why college football and the NFL and NBA had to keep going, because we have contracts that say, you know what, we got to give you at least $12 million of advertising space during our games this year.
Right.
We got to get some of this revenue. So forget the stands. If you notice, stands were dead empty. Even in soccer, major soccer throughout the country, it's like you have these arenas that are empty, fan noise, then you have million-dollar players on the field. Because guess what? The ad revenue, the TV revenue has to come in. So a part of it is between name and likeness and realizing, like, you know what? The pandemic opened up the fact of this isn't about the athletes. This is about the money. Right. So if it's about the money, let's talk turkey and let these athletes get paid in their name and likeness and other things. But at the same time, to the main point, we've got to get to a point where that media money is coming into the HBCUs, because before segregation, y'all wasn't putting us on TV, but we were beating some of these top programs. And I do think that Eddie George, Dion, Willie Simmons, of course, so sorry for just naming him now on the show, being rattling myself, but if they're able to get to a point where, hey, we're doing one of these buy-in games,
right,
and we're going to beat Ohio State, we're going to beat Florida, that's going to put us on the map as HBCUs as a program. And it's not going to be that one top recruit, because we know that one player in football isn't going to change the whole dynamic of a game, right?
Right.
It's going to take all 22 when they get on the field. But if that ends up happening to where a major upset like Appalachian State versus Michigan or Jackson State versus Florida State, right? Let that be FAMU beating Florida State or Jackson State beating Florida State. That's going to have people sit back and say, you know what? What's happening here? And that'll cause a bigger shift. But right now it's more of a fact of we need to change the landscape and dynamics of how some of these programs are funded, so that when these coaches are having these conversations, when these coaches do get the opportunities, they know that it's not just a one and done deal, that the program is going to continue to build and things are going to get better. And eventually you'll have 50 athletic trainers out of HBCU to make sure that all seven athletic programs and their athletes are recovering and at the same speed as some of these PWIs.
That's a good point. That's a great point. I'm going to go back to something real quick on the NIL. So the NIL legislation, can you just go through that one time real quick for everybody? I mean, we got some new people that came through. I want to make sure.
I'm going to pull it back up.
I want to make sure. If y'all got any question about the NIL, you know, we're going to talk about it, because they say that was the reason why, you know, Mike wasn't able to secure his recruiting class. So we wanted to talk about it so I could be fair, because I know.
I'll just go through the summary. Senate Bill 646. I'm just going through a staff analysis. I don't want to go all the way through like line by line legislation, but some of the talking points. It authorizes intercollegiate athlete to earn compensation for their use, for his or her use, is name and likeness.
Right.
It prohibits a post-secondary education institution from adopting or maintaining a requirement that unduly restricts a college athlete from earning compensation for his or her name and likeness. Mm-hmm. So basically, a school can't stop you from making money off your name and likeness. It prohibits a post-secondary institution their employees from compensating athletes, I guess a teacher, I would assume there, requires post-secondary education institution to conduct a financial literacy and life skills workshop at the beginning of the intercollegiate athlete's first and third academic years with specific conditions for the workshops. I think that that's a great piece, because the biggest thing is you don't want kids, you know, just blowing money fast. But at the same time, having some financial literacy is good. And I know that Florida has committed that through Senator Dorothy Huckel, who was really prone on teaching financial literacy in our schools. So that was another piece to make sure that these college athletes are getting their money, but at the same time that they're going to be financially responsible, because that's another piece that even through the current system wasn't there. You just pass through, you get to the NFL, hopefully they teach you, but right. Then you do end up seeing some bag boys and some guys working at Home Depot who were in the NFL 2 years ago. So it's one of those things. It specifies that intercollegiate athletes may not enter into a contract for compensation for the use of NIL, and the contract doesn't conflict with the athletic team's contract. That's the part essentially where, of course, after Hunter picked Jackson State, the new bill was filed to kind of remove that line for the negotiation part. And the last piece of the original legislation requires an intercollegiate athlete who enters into a contract for compensation to disclose the contract. And that's actually happened to where some students at Miami, Florida, I want to say the quarterback at Florida State was in the NIL.
Right.
That came from UCF that had a knee injury. It's one of those things to where you disclose it, you're opening up front about it. And I think that the biggest piece is you can't really go into an agreement until you enroll in school in the first place. So even though you're able to have an NIL conversation,
Right.
You can't sign that deal until you enroll. So it's really not to say from a business standpoint, yeah, Barstool Sports or whoever could offer $1 million. They say, hey, we could, if you live up to this, we could get you there, right? But you can't sign that deal until you get there. And essentially you have to disclose that. So all those conversations through the weeds and paper trails of how things happen, I think it opens it up for a school to be penalized if they violate the name and likeness law, right? Mm-hmm. From an NCAA and a state standpoint. But at the same time, it sets the parameters to say, this is how we work. However, from just the analysis, I know that in comparison to Mississippi specifically,
right?
Mississippi says, if you're 18, you could sign your deal. So mm-hmm. imagine, you know, this kid's 18 in high school, you get your name and likeness, I could sign mine and then go enroll in certain situations. So if a situation like that says, you know what, if they're doing that in other states, we remove this line to where you can't negotiate and say, you know what, you can, maybe if you're 18, maybe if whatever, right. that evens the playing field. And I think I'm not speaking for Chip LaMarca here. I just think perspective wise, right? I think that if he's looking at a holistic system to say, you know what, if this is going to happen to benefit HBCU programs, let's make sure that FAMU, Bethune-Cookman, Florida Memorial, and Edward Waters have the equal opportunity to do the same thing in Florida the other universities do. Now, I know the bigger conversation would be Florida State, UF, they got the bag, UCF, USF, they got the bag, UM, they can afford to do it. But it's like, we get that, but we're still at a stage where, because session doesn't start till January 11th, this is our conversation and fodder at this point, we can shape what this looks like. Right. We can go in and say, you know what, Representative LaMarca, we understand you want to make some changes. We think this would be best for the HBCUs in our state. Right.
Right.
We think this would be best for the black student athletes in our state. Guess what? It may give a little competitive advantage to Florida State and UF, but they already have it. But here's what we can do to give ourselves a little bit more, because here's where our programs are right now. Right. Right. And I think that's the part that's getting missed in this whole conversation, because we just want to be mad because the policy's being changed or this is what they do. And it's like, yeah, I hear y'all, but if you really understood politics, you would understand that this is only the beginning of the conversation, so don't even get mad. Because we're at a point where we can help shape exactly what we want this to look like. But if we want to rah-rah protest, oh, black lives, this, you're a black athlete, y'all just mad at Dion, sorry, fuck that. Let's go into the conversation of negotiating some of this policy to be like, you know what, we feel this will be best for HBCUs, black athletes in Florida, and at least say, you know what, if we're getting the top recruits to leave Alabama, Mississippi, California, Texas, and come to HBCUs in Florida
right.
or Florida schools, it only benefits us.
Exactly.
The part of it is benefiting Florida schools. It's not about benefiting Mississippi schools.
Right.
Yep.
Go ahead, Emo.
No, just to say, I mean, like, just to add on to that, you know, like we said, it's all about having a real equitable environment. You know what I mean? These laws, once they're put in place to actually help Floridians and help Florida athletes, help Florida in general, you know what I mean? So it all comes full circle, you know, and I just saw somebody in the chat was saying, you know, hoping that they give these kids some type of financial management education. A lot of the bills actually have portions in there that actually tell students to actually, or they require students to have at least like 3, 4, 5 hours worth of financial literacy classes and whatnot. So, you know, some schools have been ahead of that, you know, and I'm hoping that any more legislation that gets put out really does make sure that's to the forefront as well, you know. So
let me ask you this question, Philip. You said that you cannot actually, in the state of Florida, you cannot agree to an NIL deal until you're actually enrolled at the school, right?
Correct.
I think that's what you're saying. So is that one part of it that actually hurt Florida State? Because maybe a Tennessee could say, no, you can do this right now. I don't have to promise you the money. I can give it to you now instead of you having to wait. Because I know that did hurt Texas, I thought, right? Because the quarterback at Texas went to Ohio State so he can get paid, right?
I don't think it hurt Florida State because they still had other five-star recruits. They just didn't get the top guy they wanted.
Right, but it was a thing with the Tyree West kid, right? Where they say, well, he got a sizable bag from Tennessee, and they were saying that the promises was made. But I mean, like I always tell people, give me guaranteed money. I don't need wishful and thankful money, right? Don't project me money. Give me money. You know what I'm saying? That's where it's better in my hand than you telling me, oh, I got it for you when you get here, right? Because we know it's dark stuff that goes on in college football. Like
a kid
is promised this and then it's taken away. So is that the part that you think might have had some type of influence with the whole situation with the recruiting and everything? Either one of y'all can take it, Ebo or Philip.
Yeah, Ebo, go ahead. I know I've been talking for a while.
No, you good. Yeah. I think it definitely played a factor, you know, just in terms of the broad language of the bill, at least in Florida. You know, in Tennessee, they're like, oh, we can do, you know, you look at what they're putting out, you look at what we're putting out, we can actually give you stuff now. You know what I mean? Since we have such broad language, at least here in Florida, it probably did cause some hesitancy, you know. But I mean, in terms of looking at the list of states that actually have NIL language out there, you know, Tennessee, its language isn't as expansive as Florida's is, but you know, it probably is just a little bit more. You know, they even did recently they did a study that kind of showed, based on the 21 different states that have NIL laws, and oddly enough, the state that has the most expansive laws is New Mexico. You know, shortly after that, it's Maryland and Missouri. You know what I mean? So Florida really does have the opportunity. Yeah, Florida has the opportunity to really, you know, rise through the ranks and show, you know, how willing we are to kind of open up the market and allow students and anybody to basically come in here and make money off their name and image and likeness.
Wow. Okay. Wow, that's crazy. You want to take it a little bit more further, Philip? That was good.
No, that was good. That was good.
Okay, I got it. So somebody asked this question. I'm gonna ask it. So, what was the original intent of the bill? Did they consider schools auctioning off these kids though? I thought it was more like they could have sponsors and do commercials and merchant, etc.
Well, it's just a name and likeness. I want to say, going back to the UCF kicker or punter. That could have been maybe a cherry on top. I know for just jokingly with Chip LaMarca and his aide at the time, Corey, we wanted a tournament of NCAA football. I'm like, listen, I still have it on the 360 or whatever it is. We just want to play a new version of the game. But the bigger thing of this was at least having our athletes being able to profit and not losing their amateur status off of technology. Because right now, you could sell your iPhone and essentially it'll be an NCAA violation. You can go get a job at Walmart and it will be NCAA violation. You could take care of your family some kind of way, or get a gift from a friend to help your family, and that would be a violation. So I know somebody put like Adrian McPherson, would that be the same thing? No, because a booster wrote him a check. That would be totally different, right? But if Adrian McPherson was able to get a job and get a check, that would have been an NCAA violation. So it's kind of one of those things to say, you know what? What can you really do to do that? And I think that it was an original attack on the NCAA to say, you know what, your practices are very slavish, very archaic, out of place, right? And we've got to be able to change that. And really, I have a good friend of mine, Jared Saltalamacchia, played in Major League Baseball, drafted out of high school by the Braves. He got $250,000 up front, right? He was supposed to come to Florida State to play baseball. He got $250,000 to play baseball. He went into the minor leagues, and it's like, you know what? He went up that route, but it's like there wasn't a question of him signing with the Braves and being able to go play for Florida State. He made the decision to go pro.
Right.
And that's the difference to where any other sport, you're able to do this. You're able to be an amateur golfer and be like, you know what? These sponsors are going to take care of my training, essentially. If you watch King Richard and you pay attention to how they really say it, you're like, you know what? Yes, Venus and Serena were amateurs, but guess what? They were still at a point where who was paying for the house, who was paying for the trainings, who was paying for all this. And it's like, you have amateur status before you turn pro, but nobody's on you like that. And yes, they try to portray, and that's a whole nother conversation, how black dads are portrayed, kind of like black coaches. But all this put together, it's kind of like in other sports, it's able to happen. But track and field, like my little brother ran, and he had offered maybe to start running pro with Nike. Yes, you can't run in college after that, right? But then you're running on pro circuits throughout the world. Yeah. So it's a fact of, this happens in other sports, but when it comes down to college athletics, because it's a billion-dollar industry, that ends up being a problem. One thing I want to highlight, I actually pulled in, and I know it's not answering the direct question for why name and likeness was created, but you look at the budgets. I'm going to go through. Florida State has a total revenue of $177 million a year. This is as of 2020. Right. UF has $157 million total revenue. UM, $94 million. Now, going to the top HBCU, it would be Bethune-Cookman, $14 million athletic budget. FAMU, $9 million athletic budget, right? And it's not to say the name and likeness is going to help that, but ends up saying, you know what, there's so much revenue coming through these universities. Why can't any of the students get in? Why can't you mean to tell me that if FAMU has a revenue budget of $9 million, right? You mean to tell me one student gonna come through and make $1 million? Impossible, right? Right. But if they can get 100,000, if they can get 50 to 25, 75,000 to help with towards their college, or it goes into a trust fund that says, you know what, when you graduate, this goes towards this, because guess what? If you get injured, we're only gonna cover 2-3 years of that injury.
Yep.
You tear the ACL, you out of college, guess what? You on your own, so why not have that money set aside to take care of you? Because guess what? That knee gonna fuck you up for the rest of your life. You're gonna have it when you're 80, it's still gonna be hurt. Yep. So why not have a situation where these resources are going to help you? Because guess what? We're only gonna cover you for 3 years while you're in school with our insurance at any university, big or small.
Right.
So why not get to a point that says, you know what? Help these athletes help themselves. Because when they get out, guess what? If they have a degree, they don't have a job, okay, cool. Maybe I have a $50,000 nest egg, I could start a business. It could be a car wash business, but guess what? That car wash business could go to the biggest thing in the city. You could be a millionaire or a long term. You know, so it's so many different things that people aren't thinking about because they're looking at the value of education. Yes, education is valuable, but guess what? There are plenty of people out here getting paid for their education, right?
Yeah.
And so why should I only have to give my athletic physical ability for y'all to like me and love me? And the second I say, you know what, I may want to go to HBCU, well, your career is not going to be shit anyway. Right. Go tell that to Jerry Rice.
Yeah. I got a somebody just sent me a DM. I want to be very clear about something. Somebody just sent me a DM. I don't care if a person is a Republican or a Democrat. I care about black politics. That's what I care about. I'm just saying somebody sent me a DM about something. I'm just like, I don't care about all that stuff. I care about black politics, okay? Or this show. Like this ideal of whatever a person is or whatever a person vote, I don't care personally. So this ideal of, is it a liberal agenda or a conservative agenda? Doesn't matter to me. It just matters about a progressive, the black politics. I just say that to get that out of the way.
And anybody want to check my Twitter profile, Hip Hop Lobbyist? Guess what? You can tell Republican, Democrat, I'm on their ass about hiring black folks, about giving black folks opportunities.
That's my
this, if you want to talk real, this is a $1 billion industry to control the laws in the state of Florida. But guess what? There are only 60 black lobbyists in the whole state out of 1,400.
Right.
So there's only 60 of us that could essentially say, you know what? How can policy be shaped to benefit our people?
Right. Exactly.
Okay. All right. I just want to get that out of the way because that was a dumb DM. I just want to address that shit.
I already know. Don't worry.
Yeah. No, you good. I'm just going to dead that real quick. You know what I'm saying?
And honestly, like Philip said, man, that's why I appreciate Philip, because, you know, we may be on different sides of the aisle, but we at the end of the day, I think we all still want to get to the same destination. You know what I mean? We want to make sure we have equitable choices for our people.
You need voices in all those rooms is what I keep trying to tell people, right? Like, I told somebody this. I said, dude, my granddad loved Colin Powell. Colin Powell. Loved him, right? And growing up, I would always hear people talking about, you know, black people, you have to be Democrat. And then one day I asked my granddad, I said, granddad, did you know Colin Powell's a Republican? He was like, yeah. I was like, well, I thought son, none of that matters. Find people that you like and that you believe in and that they say the things that you care about. And he was like, forget about the red and blue part, because black people, we're all in the gray. You know what I'm saying? So he was like, we're in the gray and we're trying to advance through that gray. So I just want that, you know, because I don't have time for that type of stuff. But I got another question. Nationally, though, how can all the states get on the same page with NIL? Mississippi has completely different rules than Florida, for example. What will be the balance? These states are never going to do that. I'm going to say that, but I'm going to let y'all address it. But I'm going to say politics is not built like that. Politics is built on winning an argument. So if you make it black and white, then nobody can argue through it. And that's just not what they don't want to do that. But y'all can answer it, though. Y'all might have a better answer for that, because, I mean, that's how I look at it.
No, I think you're right, though. I mean, like, honestly, this is about appealing to egos at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Our lawmakers and legislators are going to look at this and be like, oh, Mississippi says they're better than us. All right, bet. We're going to go out. We're going to go back. We're going to write laws. We're going to make sure that Florida is at the forefront, you know, because at the end of the day, it really is just about appealing to egos, you know, to the masses and making sure people know, hey, you know, Florida's at the forefront. Florida's the leader. We're the leader in the Southeast. We're the leader in the South. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, they're going to see where they've been lagging behind. Well, they should see where they've been lagging behind, and they're going to hopefully take the steps to kind of mitigate that.
Okay.
And I'll say this. I've known Chip LaMarca, the representative, who called, I guess, some slack for his comments in the Sports Illustrated article and for filing the as a quote-unquote response, right? One of the most stand-up guys, and I'm not just saying this as, you know, most people look at, oh, Uncle Tom, this, not a stand-up guy. He's a Republican in a strong Democratic stronghold of Broward County. One of the most moderate Republicans you'll meet. He gets it. He understands it. And just the only thing I'll share from my personal conversation, just message back and forth, was that he's not anti-Deion. He's not anti-HBCU. If it helps Deion and helps HBCUs, then he's with it. But it's a fact of if we're at a competitive disadvantage, not his words, mine, if we're at a competitive disadvantage, then we're going to do what we have to do as a state to make sure that we're competitive.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
Yep.
Okay. Let me go to this other question they got. Would it be easier to just remove the restrictions regarding the NIL? That's just pennies in comparison to TV money and revenue players unable to get.
I think I may have misquoted that. That last one, those are my words, not his. I don't know. Okay.
You actually did. Yeah, you actually said it. So they said, would it be easy to remove it? I think they're trying to remove some of the restrictions, but y'all can answer that.
Yeah, no, I mean, they definitely are trying to remove some of the restrictions. I mean, like we said earlier, you know, this is they don't want this to happen again. You know what I mean? They want Florida schools to be in the news for good things. You know what I mean? People coming out and talking about this is Florida State's blunder. You know, this is the biggest recruiting blunder that we've seen in 20 some years. You know what I mean? They're going to be removing a lot of these restrictions and making sure that it's a lot more open.
So you're saying that we might be able to, if it's a 75 zone, we might be able to hit 85 next time?
Don't be surprised if we're flying through that thing at 120 miles per hour. Seriously, bro.
We got on that part. That's a lot of money for young kids. Yeah, we got on the money management part. And I'm going to say this right here, too, about the money management part. And I will say this. If a college athlete gets a scholarship to a university, a big-time university, especially at Florida State, and I think it's happening more and more at HBCUs too. They have people that really guide financial literacy at these big universities, right? I think it was Jimbo. I know Jimbo was part of it.
He did. He had some, yeah.
Harbaugh does it, where they talk about money, investing in your brand, and creating long-term viability and wealth, right? So I think that, I always say this, like people's talking about how much is a scholarship worth. I will always tell people that if a kid signs that dotted line to go to a big time university and he buys into everything about that university, he should be able to make money when he graduates college. I've always said that. But I do get the idea of being paid while you're playing. Like, yeah, pay that kid. You know what I'm saying? But if y'all got anything y'all want to add to that, y'all can.
No, I mean, we did. I mean, you know, Didier Oxenden, he's been with FSU for a while. You know what I mean? When I was playing, we had people who came on. And, you know, just so everyone knows, like, I was a walk-on. You know what I mean? I had a scholarship that was academic, you know, and then I did the sports on the side, you know. And I was able to, when I got out of college, you know, just from learning, just from talking to these guys, from building up a network, I was able to take that and make money to where I'm making okay money now, you know. And it's about everybody having that chance and that opportunity to, because I tell you what, there's a lot of guys who didn't have that opportunity. And now, you know, you've seen Freddie talking about it before. There are guys who we've played with who are struggling now who definitely shouldn't be, you know, if they were able to take advantage of the opportunities that were provided to them, you know, they probably would be in a different position than they are now. You know, so it really is important that we have that there are rules in place that allow people to, you know, it doesn't have to be mandates, but there should be rules in place that allow people to have more access to those opportunities, especially on the financial and wealth management side.
Right. Oh, I had somebody had hit me up about sponsorship. I'm going to say this. I don't have a sponsor on this show, mainly because I didn't want to be beholden to dropping a lot of content all the time, just drop it as I felt like it. But if you want to sponsor the show, just hit my DMs and I wanted to do something because somebody called me out. They was like, well, Sam, you donate money to Florida State. Why don't you donate money to HBCU since you care so much? this was after the Jacksonville State people attacked me, you know, for talking so much. They said I was bashing Jackson State, which I really was not doing that in this space at all. I was like, but I tell you what, if there is a sponsorship that want to give me sponsorship dollars, I will take 50% of that and I will donate to any HBCU. We will vote on it every month for the podcast. So if the sponsorship was what you want me to do, you want me to donate money to the school, I'm going to find an HBCU this year. I might find two. I'm going to donate money to them, all right? And I'm going to post that on the internet for everybody because people got really upset with me. Dude, Jackson State, that Twitter, dude, they was out of control, man. I was like, where do you people come from? Wow. I got called anti-black and everything. And I'm like, what are y'all doing? I'm like, matter of fact, I don't even date outside my race. What is it all about? But no, man. But if you want to sponsor the pod, we'll sell some t-shirts, man. I told Brandon I'll actively look for sponsorship. We would donate 50% of it to a HBCU. We'll find one every month. All right, let's go to the death knell of college, NCAA. Do you think that we're going to see more of these high-profile athletes go to the HBCU level, coach, recruit the big-time players like not? Because something Deion said too, and this is important for all HBCUs, stop acting like you're less than. Like, and I think that's been his biggest message. Like, we should aim for the sky too. So do you think that you're going to see more of these coaches say, hey, I want to look at the top 100 players and say, I'm going to recruit that kid and go after that kid? Do you think that we could see something where maybe the top 100 kids, maybe you get 10 of them that start going to HBCUs playing for a high profile? Like, I mean, not Deion, but let's say Chad Johnson decided to become a wide receiver coach at FAMU. I mean, can we see a scenario where the HBCU level rises up and kind of puts a death knell into NCAA?
I see it. I think that it's as simple as Chad and Deion, when you know that they had that little thing, it was on YouTube at least, where they line up with the feet and Deion breaking it down and Chad talking about what it is some ingrained knowledge that you have for being a professional athlete that you're going to teach some of these kids that they're not going to get just from doing the little cone drills or just meeting with anybody. At the same time, I've seen some female trainers and coaches who have trained some great DBs, some great wide receivers in the NFL, and like they deserve opportunities too. So I think that overall, more coaches do need to get opportunity. And I think that the problem would be, you know, I guess the expectations of meeting these HBCU budgets, to be honest, to be frank. I mean, because there's a certain value that they bring, and we get to a point where our brand is valuable, and it determines our value. Mm-hmm. So Chad Johnson coming in and saying, you know what, if he wanted $500,000 a year to coach the wide receivers, how's that work with a $9 million budget for a whole athletic department, right? So there has to be some realistic expectations in there, which Deion kind of said with his pieces, like, why would I help them get a deal for more than I'm making as a coach? I understand the dynamics of what a professional athlete's going to be or what a paid athlete's going to feel like versus their coaches, something like that. So I do think that, to the point, more opportunities will be there. It just has to be the right dynamic. I think that what Deion started will be a trickle effect. We'll see a lot more, but then it depends on the opportunity that's there for him, because we know that, you know, Black folks, people in general, if Donovan McNabb went to go coach at Bethune-Cookman, there's no saying that they're going to be a great program in 2-3 years. But it's a fact of, like, you know, we're going to have the expectation. And our thing is, like, McNabb coming in, he took his team to the Super Bowl. He should be able to coach a great quarterback at the HBCU level, right?
Yeah, so Black mediocrity would not be accepted by Black people.
you will be
Denzel Washington, brother. You're not just me. You trash if you're not Denzel Washington. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So there'll be
you gotta be Michael Jordan.
There'll be some growing pains to where some opportunities will come, and then some people won't be able to flourish. But at the same time, that there will be some opportunities that Deion will come in and turn the whole program around, right?
Right.
And even when you think about some of the things, it's like, you know what, he has NFL coaches, people who were looking to get opportunities that aren't, it could be that good fertile phase. But then the other thing we have to look at is, you know, they start poaching coaches. I know that it was in the papers last year that after Coach Willie Simmons led FAMU, that he was given like a running back coaching job at a bigger program. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I get it. You know, head coach is your program. Maybe you can make more money and go somewhere else. But he came back. And I think a part of it is that's the allure. I think as Jay-Z said, the allure of what's out there. Like, you know, I could go to a bigger program and start in the chain, but I could still build something here that's how it has a stronger foundation. I think that's the part where we're going to have people who are coaching who are looking at the foundational piece instead of the career piece. And I think a part of it is when you're building that foundation, your career is going to go up. But it's the fact of, you know what, we're building a whole HBCU brand, and I'm going to buy into the brand and be committed to that brand and not worry about Clemson or Ohio State offering me a wide receiver or a DB job,
right,
$1 million 2 years from now. Because the biggest thing, and people, of course, have said it, Deion going to win at Jackson State, then Florida State going to hire him, right? it's one of those things, but it's like, why should we have that stipulation? But at the same time, if Deion is committed, and this could bite us in the butt in a couple of years if he decides to leave Jackson State to go to a bigger program. It's like, you know what? It's one of those things where you have to have people who are overly committed to the institutions that have been here that have really taken the back burner from the past 40 years of college athletics.
Mm. All right, you'll go, Ebo.
Yeah, no, I mean, he hit the nail on the head, man. This past week was, you know, something that doesn't happen very often, but I think that it does. I think that it does really. I think that this will eventually start to trickle down, and we'll start to see it a lot more where, you know, a lot of black high school athletes are going to start taking a look at it and be like, okay, like, I've seen this culture, you know, I've grown up in this culture. My parents have told me about this culture. You know, this might be something I want to do, you know, instead of going to a different type of university. I mean, we saw it when Kayvon Thibodeau came and visited. You know, he actually had fam. He had fam. He had FSU. You know, he obviously went to Oregon. But, you know, I feel like this is a step that's starting to happen, you know, starting to consider it. Somebody goes to it. And then after that, it'll actually start trying to trickle down, and you'll start seeing it happen more and more and more. You know, HBCUs ain't no slouch. I don't know why people start to, a lot of people are like, oh, Jackson State, da da da. It's like, nah, you know, a lot of these programs, a lot of the kids who go to these programs, you know, they're not any worse than some of these kids that go to some of these D1 programs. You know what I mean? A lot of these HBCUs, if properly funded and taken care of, can probably handle a good number of schools on the D1AA level. You know what I mean? And I think it'll definitely start to sprout, and we'll definitely start to see that culture grow a little bit more. I don't think it's going to be in the next, you know, year or two, but I think in a couple of years down the road, we'll see that this starts to really enhance and really explode.
Go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, to Ebo's point, I remember a couple of years ago, it had to be Miami played FAMU. I forget, maybe one of those 55-0 blowouts, right? And one of the athletes I knew that played for FAM, he was like, the only difference between us is we have that speed on our first team, right? Mm-hmm. But then they have second and third strings that are also as fast as our first string, but our second and third aren't as fast as them. Mm-hmm. So when it gets to the I guess, continuity of the team, we're there. That first match is there. But then when we get to the bench, when we get to the ins and outs, that's when we start to fall off. And I'll say, when I was working with FAMU's basketball team, we played Indiana. Mike Davis was coaching Indiana at the time, black coach. Mm-hmm. And Marco Killingsworth was a big man down low. We ran a 2-3 zone, and that's what the coach wanted. But after the game, there was a guy, Lamar Twitty, who played for FAM, and one of the guys that played for Indiana used to play with him back in Pompano. And he was like, listen, man, if y'all just ran a man-to-man, y'all could have beat us, mm-hmm. right? And it wasn't a fact of saying they have better athletes, they have, you know, if you ever been to the Hoosier Stadium, it comes down like an eye, it's loud as hell in there. I see my body right through the chairs. But it's a factor of, I know a lot of these athletes will realize, like, you know what? If it's a different coaching scheme, if it's a different ABC continuity, X's and O's, there could be a lot more upsets, a lot more big wins. And I know that, I want to say, FAMU beat Iowa in basketball about 2 years ago. It was a shock, but it's a fact of the athletes are there. Anybody can play ball. It's just a fact of when you lined up, mm-hmm. what are you taught? What are you coached to do? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it comes down to the coaching. Right.
Right.
And I think that's really it. And the knock of it is HBCUs get beat by 20, 30 points. You have an article like Sports Illustrated did about Coppin State, to where they're traveling, they're playing in the other team's practice jerseys because they didn't have it. And understanding, it's like, you know what? Maybe they only have one manager on the whole team for 15 guys. Mm-hmm. Right. So some of those things, or I think their thing was, their athletic department was such in the red that they had, they were scheduling games like NBA teams, right? 14 games, or 14 days, 9 games, right?
Wow.
Which is unrealistic for a college team, but at the same time, it's like, this is what their program needs to do to stay solvent, yep. right? So yeah. a lot of it is dynamics, politics, funding, but at the same time, if we really look at it athlete for athlete, I think we can match up. It's just a fact of, to sidebar it, if you get a Bronny James to come to a FAMU or something like that, that changes the dynamic, right? Because right. people may forget OJ Mayo, when he was one of the top recruits, him and his shooting buddy, his walk, I want to say, they had FAMU in their top five. They had USC, FAMU, and everything else, but it's a fact of he had aunts and uncles that went to FAM. So he had some inkling there. He didn't come.
Right.
But it's a fact of if we can be in the conversation, if we can really be considered and really show the benefit of our program, I think we have a shot.
I think that's going to be the part now. I think you'll start trying to see some of these HBCUs try to schedule some of these D1 teams. I wonder what these D1 teams actually accept them. And, you know, because I think that'll be probably the next step, I would imagine, right? Because you,
right.
I mean.
It's two-part approach to that. One, the lighting in some of the HBCU facilities need to change, because one of the main reasons a lot of the HBCU games can't be put on TV is because of the lighting. That's one aspect. The other thing is, even when you have like an Al Lawson Center being built at FAMU's campus, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't built just to be built. Gaither Jimmy used to sweat. The thing is, okay, we can bring a Texas in, if we can bring a big school here, that'll be a big payout. But then the thing is, we got to get the crowd in the stadium so the payout can work both ways.
Right.
I think that's another thing to where, when we're talking about the media, we're talking about ESPN, we're talking about having games televised and things of that nature, there's so much that has to be invested to start that conversation that says, you know what, by the time it gets here, we can have an ESPN broadcast, which will help bring in the media buys, we'll sell, market, whatever. But it's like, we got to get to a point where some of these big schools are coming to us and we're not just going to them. And yeah. I think that'll be a bigger shift in the financial aspect of what HBCUs are doing and the parity between the funding between PWIs and HBCUs.
And just to add on to that point, you know, there's plenty of, in terms of like lights and even like equipment and whatnot, you know, you've seen that, you know, there is pieces of legislation that, you know, that mandate and require schools or even municipalities to have up-to-date codes in terms of, you know, building codes, in terms of lights that they need, in terms of HVAC systems that they need. So, you know, having good legislation like that can also spur, you know, the state government to actually make sure that funding is taken care of for a lot of these other HBCUs to make sure that they're up to par in terms of PWIs.
Okay. I got one question. I know people care. This is a Florida State. Well, it's really a listen up podcast, but we talk about Florida State stuff. But somebody wanted to know, Ebo, I got a DM. They asked me the bill that was signed to give, I think it was $20 million to Florida State, but it was also some money to help FAMU. Also, like, where does that bill stand at, and like, what's going on with that? Because I know some vote down on that
recently. Are you talking about the Doak reconstruction? And I think it is.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about that one, Philip. I don't know. Do you know more about? Yeah, you know.
I'm familiar with that. Because I have a non-disclosure agreement, I can't share too much, but I'll share what I can know. I know that the city of Tallahassee has a thing called Blueprint 2000. If you're familiar with Tallahassee or in general, you've seen that Cascades Park has happened and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Blueprint 2000 has been the main forefront of how Tallahassee is shaped, right?
Right.
How public-private dollars get spent and things of that nature. That's why if you go to Tallahassee, you see the new AC Hotel and all this other stuff. Yep. It's like a part of that was part of the blueprint. So a part of it was Bragg was at a point of FAMU Stadium. They needed additional resources. So $1 million was allocated for their stadium to help bring it up to par and things of that nature. Florida State was given basically a $20 million from the same pot of funds, but essentially – because Tallahassee has had some issues with FBI and internal contracting from previous mayor and previous administrations, things of that nature, it's really putting an auspice or an eye under some of these contracts and opportunities and how much Florida State ends up getting. I know that through years, when I was lobbying for FAMU, we had to help save the engineering school from being taken over by Florida State. The Civic Center was given to Florida State out of the blue in a last minute budget deal. just to, you know, officially give it that. And that's another reason why FAMU had to start having graduations at the Lawson Center. It's a lot of inner politics in this, right? So there were some changes there. So how it essentially feels is Florida State is getting the blunt of everything, right? And locally, people are looking at it like, you know what, we have crime as an issue. Tallahassee is a hotbed for crime in the whole state. So people locally weren't supporting the fact that Florida State getting more when the boosters just paid Willie $10 million to get out. Why don't you go get the $10, $20 million from the same boosters type guy, right? So, so essentially, when you have people who sit back and say, you know what, y'all have the money, why should we give you more? Versus a fam, you like, you know what, we can help you because we haven't given you any. That ends up being a situation to where the $20 million or the $1 million ends up being put in. But that's not state money, that's city money. The city of Tallahassee and Leon County money. The state of Florida would essentially only give if the university requests or if there's something there like the Black Student Union that was built. I know that that was a legislative piece that went through the state to get funded because we can get into funding of buildings and all the other things, but that ends up being like a deeper political conversation that probably would need a whole nother podcast. just giving some background to that. And honestly saying, I do have NDAs. I do have a couple of business entities that I'm working with that are working with Florida State and FAMU now. So I'll share what I can, but I know that a lot of it is still in the works.
Okay. All right. Well, I know people weren't really wanting to care about that. I mean, they really cared about it. I see both sides, right? Like you need Florida State to be, you know, viable because it does bring a lot of money into the city. But then there are things where you say, well, Florida State, what are y'all doing with y'all money? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I think I was telling somebody, because we were talking about the support staff at FSU. And I was like, well, you know, I talked to people and they were like, Florida State support staff ain't really that big. The recruiting support staff ain't that big compared to other big time universities. So what are they doing with the money, right? And I know they've got into a lot of investment deals that they kind of got money tied up into and everything like that. And if the city feels like they can attack bigger problems, I see it. Because $29 million is a lot of money for a city budget. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So I get it. You know, I see both sides. Like I told somebody, I see both sides of it. I won't sit here and say, don't give the money to Florida State. And I won't say Florida State deserves the money. But
Florida State probably has alumni that could cut that $20 million check tomorrow. I mean, the Dunlap building didn't get built off osmosis. I mean, somebody gave that money. So what are we talking about? I think it gets to a point of even think about this. I remember coming to Tallahassee in 99, Pensacola. It was a gate. It was like basically a fence. It wasn't what it is now, the tunnel and all that, right? And you still had Bobby up in the tower coaching, looking down. Now you have a whole indoor facility. You had Jimbo win a national title, and then Jimbo come out and say, we don't even have good facilities. So imagine, and this is what people forget. Tallahassee is like Lower Alabama, like South Georgia, right? It's a small town. People see the growth. You can't sit here and tell me this isn't great. 20 plus years, you see the growth of Florida State. So it gets to a point of saying, okay, cool. How much more do we need? If we just won a national title with these average facilities, why the fuck we need better facilities for?
Yeah.
Right? And then when it gets to a point of saying, okay, cool, we got to recruit. The school, the university hadn't got Willie 1 year, Jimbo last year, Willie that 2 years he was there, Norville these 2 years, 5 years of trash, right? Combined, why are we getting $20 million to this?
Right.
It's like Gainesville's not doing it. Tuscaloosa's not doing it. Why would we give and when you look at it, it's a smaller town, just like Oxford or where Ole Miss is, it's a small town. The only difference is Tallahassee has a capital in it, so we get a little bit more because nobody's coming to Tallahassee vacation. We'll get politics and we get college football. And a part of it is when you take or you look at like, okay, 5 years of a down program, that's not a good investment for $20 million right now. What are you going to invest here that's going to make people say, you know what, I want to come to Florida State now? Because guess what? The number one recruit looked at the facilities and said, you know what, I'll go to Jackson State instead.
Yeah, it's not that much of a deal. Well, to him, it wasn't. It wasn't a bigger factor. It wasn't enough of a factor for him. Yeah,
right. I think what Deion said is, if you let them come to our homecoming, which is the biggest one they've ever had, you're going to lose. And, of course, the HBCU homecoming experience is way different from a PWI homecoming experience. He probably didn't want to go to the yard show or the road show. He probably didn't want to go to that. Right. But if it's Moneybagg Yo having a concert at Jackson State homecoming, Young Dolph, rest in peace, it's like, it's going to relate to him more. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm with my people.
Right. Yeah.
So of course you're gonna lose recruits that way.
Yeah, that's interesting. What do you think about that, Ebo? I guess we went longer than I ever went on the podcast on this one. But there's a lot of information, man. I hope everybody enjoying it. What do you think about that though, as far as Florida State, the viability of Florida State in the next couple of years? Because somebody asked me, Sam, do you feel like, I think we was in the Fire Norvell space. They was like, Sam, do you feel like it's over for us? Like, do you feel like we're ever gonna be back and this and that? Because FSU claims they're broke a lot and all these other things. I'll let you answer, not answer after that.
It's tough, man, because, you know, obviously, you know, we all understand what college football is keeping up with Joneses. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everybody putting out the new next video, you know, everybody's new graphic director team is coming out and showing off. And, you know, they got a new weight room, got all this stuff coming on. So, you know, I feel like with the new administration coming in, they have a plan and a vision that they want to put out. And now we just need everything to kind of hit properly. But we all know, you know, you can have a plan. Everybody got a plan until they get hit in the mouth, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like this is the first haymaker that we've seen this past week. You know what I mean? We all knew, like, oh, man, all right, Travis Hunter's going to come in. Like, he's going to bring more people in. We're going to have everybody coming. Now, oh, Travis Hunter ain't coming. So now what? You know what I mean? Yeah. So now we got to take a look at the journey and the road that we want to go and say, hey, you know, do we have a plan B, plan C, and plan D? You know, because if not, we're done. You know what I mean? But I do think that this staff, I will say that I think this staff has a clear vision of what they want. Now it's all about if we can execute, you know. And I think that after getting knocked out last Wednesday, I'm hoping that we can kind of recruit to make sure that we're back on. make sure that we're back on track. I do think, you know, the scheduling that we have didn't help at all. You know what I mean? You look right at some of the other schools in Florida, and, you know, you got Miami who's playing, playing like Western Carolina or something like that, able to blow them out easy, you know, while we got LSU second week of the year next week, you know. But with the schedule that's coming out and everything that's kind of going, I do think that there is an opportunity for us to at least make some more gains. I'm expecting 7 to 8 wins next year. You know what I mean? I know it might be a lot of wishful thinking, but, you know, that's what I would like to see. But I do think that the staff that we have on place, and hopefully if we can make some more good hires in the next couple of weeks, I think that will be okay.
Yeah. Philly, you got anything you want to add to that?
No. I mean, I don't think it's gonna happen overnight. I don't think that's gonna happen on Norville, but, you know, I'll give you a hopeful grace. Like I said, my wife's a Florida State. She loves college football, Florida State football. So I gotta watch what I say. So I'll give you 6 wins.
Yeah. Whole game at least. Well, I think people that listen to this podcast know how I feel about Norville, which is funny, right? So on the timeline, it seems like I hate Mike Norville. But On the podcast, I always say it's not really as much about him as it is getting the things around him for him to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see those pieces in place for him to be successful, right? And like somebody say, do you think they'll be back? It may not happen under him, right? I do think in the next 10 to 15 years, Florida State will be back viable again, right? Mm-hmm. It just takes one guy with a vision, with the type of structure that you need that could bring Florida State back. And that may not be a head coach. Well, it may not be a head coach. It might be hiring the right athletic director at the right time. It might be hiring the right football GM at the right time. It might be some prominent booster coming up the ranks and say, hey, I want to do it like this. I'm going to support the program in this way. This is how we're going to do it. But we need a galvanizing figure to come in and really bring all these things together. And it's one of those things I was telling people about Miami. People got mad at me because they said I'm hyping up the Mario hire. But I was like, Mario can walk in every room in Miami. Mm-hmm. No, he can walk in the booster room. He can walk in the small time look of cafe. He can walk in the hood. Like, he can do all of that. And he can talk to all those groups and speak all their language at the same time. I think we've had the last two coaches we've had haven't been able to do that. They haven't been able to bridge those gaps and all of that. And personally, a head coach shouldn't have to do all of that.
Yeah. That's the big thing, man. That's the big thing, man.
Go ahead, bro.
I'll say this. I was working at the DoubleTree Hotel downtown Tallahassee when Jimbo was the offensive coordinator. And Julio Jones used to come on visits, and EJ Manuel came on visits. Yeah. And I remember Mike, what was the basketball player? Mike, can't remember his name. He walked through the hotel with his socks and damn near barefoot. That's one thing I remember, right? He always hit the game winning shots.
I know you're talking about. Oh, man, yeah, I know you're talking about. Damn.
But it gets to a point where we Florida State have been losing top recruits.
Right.
We just played it off well, right? Jameis came in. We had a good couple runs after that. It's just a fact of, I think we just, like
Michael you said, Snare.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Was Michael Snare. Yeah.
Michael Snare. Yeah. We stopped recruiting. We just felt that the brand would be in itself good enough to right. get more. And right now, it's kind of like it wasn't. But like Florida, like Miami, all the programs have to go through this cycle. Well, we just have to refresh, and that's just where Florida State is.
If you show something about Jimbo, Jimbo could walk in all those rooms too and speak all those languages too. And you know, I know people hate Jimbo, but I mean, I remember one time I was at this football little reunion thing, and Jimbo had all the former players there. But the thing that was special about Jimbo, he could remember every damn thing, right? So when he talked to a former player about a game, he remembered everything about that game. So even if you're Tamrick Vanover, who a bunch of kids may not know, I might walk by Tamrick Vanover, don't even know who he is. Jim will be like, oh, man, I remember that play you made against Nebraska. And he'll go into details about these things. And that makes a player feel like, oh, this guy, you know, he's smart. He knows everything, right? You know? So he was able to do that, too. So we just got to find a galvanizing figure. And Mike might become that. They might get the right people around him, and he might become that in a year. Hopefully, I mean, we talking about 3 years from now. I mean, good God, man.
We're gonna be good. I think we're gonna be good. And but like you said, just last point before y'all hop off, like Sam, like it's so true what you said about like Jimbo actually knowing everything. You know what I mean? He used to come in the locker room after every game. He'd dap up everybody, say good game, no matter if you played or not. You know what I mean? He was good at that. You know, he really did. Somebody in the comments said he did the least or never mind. But anyway, yeah, no, he really did come out. I think Norvell will be, once we are able to have the right pieces in place, I think we're going to be good. It's all about just getting those pieces.
And dude, they said the way Jimbo used to be with those high school coaches down there in Miami, it was like he was their best friend. Like, look at this kid. Look at that kid. He just knew all the kids' name. He knew all the coaches. And he was a different guy. You know what I'm saying? And and Nick Saban's a different guy. These guys are different. And you can't find them everywhere. So, you know, but you never know, man. Hey, football goes in cycles. You're great, then you're bad. You know what I'm saying? So the Patriots wasn't always great. You know what I'm saying? Parcells took that job, built it up. Belichick finally got it and made it great. And, I mean, if Belichick leaves.
Don't forget, Pete Carroll was in there for a year, got kicked out, and had to go to USC.
So it's just all about – it's just, like I say, it's all about fit, man. You know what I'm saying? It's all about fit sometimes. So, you know.
Fit and family, Sam. Is that what you're trying to say?
You say what?
Fit and family.
Yeah, fit and family. I always say that. Fit and family. People be thinking I hate Norvell. And it's like, that's not what this is. This is about make a bowl game, man. Like I said in the spaces, just make a bowl game.
With me and Norvell, I don't have an issue. I don't think he's a bad coach. What I do think is that he came into a losing situation that Willie was given a rebuilding situation. And I think that the reality is both of them are rebuilding coaches. Kind of like when Miami hired that coach out of Temple to coach. It's like he wasn't an old championship winning coach. I just need to rebuild because guess what? We have students that aren't graduating. We got lower GPAs than we used to. We need to get the program right. And I think Norville and Taggart have been the transitional coaches for the next big coach to come in and get the program right.
Yeah, it's terrible. I hate it all. I mean, we in it. Like I tell people, we in it. You know, all we got is each other. You know what I'm saying? So making jokes on the timeline is just what I'm going to do. You know what I'm saying? Until we out of it, I'm going to be making jokes. Because, I mean, what else you want me to do? I can't, you know what I'm saying? What else we going to do, man? I mean, like somebody had to tell me, I was did an interview with Wall Street Journal yesterday. And they were like, it's a big bowl game on it. I said, it's a bowl game today? I said, when they start a bowl game? She was like, you didn't? I said, you know what? My team ain't made a bowl game in so damn long. I don't even know the schedule no more.
Somebody in the comments put Norville is our goal, not our goal. And you're right.
Oh, God.
But I really do appreciate you guys, man. Make sure y'all get it's at Hip Hop Lobbyist.
Yeah, at Hip Hop Lobbyist. And people who don't know LOBBYIST, I understand people may not know how to spell it, but hip hop is all the same.
You did that on purpose, yeah. You did that on purpose.
Give my boy Ebo a follow. He's a really good follower. And I know you just got elected as a councilman.
Yeah, about a year ago now. Yeah.
So give him a follow. We appreciate you guys, man, for coming on, man. This has been a Listen Up Podcast. Make sure y'all review, subscribe, and we out.
You just heard the Listen Up Podcast. Yeah.